Well, we come to our 11th president, James Knox Polk. And he's considered by many to be the best one-term president in American history. Very strong leader during the Mexican War. He added a huge area to the United States. In addition, he kept all of his campaign promises. That doesn't always happen. And so we've got some fun facts, as we usually have been doing, and each time we get together, we've been working through these presidents, but most importantly, we're trying to center in on their the spiritual aspects of their life. So let's start off with some of these fun facts, though. He's born in North Carolina, 1795. He was a sickly child who suffered from gallstones throughout his childhood. And at the age of 10, he moved with his family to Tennessee. And at 17, he had his gallstones surgically removed without the benefit of anesthesia or sterilization. And so finally, at the age of 18, he is well enough to begin his formal education. And by 1816, he was accepted at the University of North Carolina, where he graduated from 2 years later with honors. Well, in 1824, he married Sarah Childress, who was extremely well-educated for the time. She attended the Salem Female Academy High School in North Carolina, and that was an educational institution for women that had been established in 1772. Polk relied on her throughout his political life to help him write speeches and letters, and she was effective, she was respected, and she was an influential first lady. Well, in 1825, he won a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives, where he would serve for 14 years, and he earned the nickname Young Hickory because of his support of Andrew Jackson, who was known as Old Hickory. And when Jackson won the presidency in 1828, we see Polk's star was on the rise. He became quite powerful in Congress, and he served as Speaker of the House from 1835 to 1839, only leaving Congress to become the governor of Tennessee. Well, he was not expected to run for president in 1844. Martin Van Buren wanted to be nominated for a second term as president, but his stance against the annexation of Texas was unpopular with the Democratic Party. So the delegates went through 9 ballots before compromising on Polk as their pick for president. And in the general election, Polk ran against Whig candidate Henry Clay, who opposed the annexation of Texas. And both Clay and Polk ended up receiving 50% of the popular vote. However, Polk was able to get 170 out of 275 electoral votes. Well, that election of 1844 centered around the issue of the annexation of Texas, which was then an independent republic after it gained independence from Mexico in 1836. And President John Tyler was a strong supporter of annexation, and his support combined with Polk's popularity meant that the annexation measure passed 3 days before Tyler's term in office ended. One of Polk's campaign pledges was to put an end to those boundary disputes in the Oregon Territory between the United States and Great Britain. And he had supporters that took up the rallying cry, 5440 or fight. And that referred to the northernmost latitude of all of the Oregon Territory. However, once Polk became president, he negotiated with the British to set the boundary at the 49th parallel, which gave America the areas that would become Oregon, Idaho, and Washington. A term showed up in 1845. That term was Manifest Destiny, and it was coined by a gentleman named John O'Sullivan. And in his argument for the annexation of Texas, he called it, quote, the fulfillment of our manifest destiny to overspread the continent allotted by Providence end of quote. In other words, he was saying that America had a God-given right to extend from sea to shining sea. And Polk was president at the height of this and helped extend America with both his negotiations for the Oregon Territory boundary and the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. And we see in 1846, April of 1846, Mexican troops crossed the Rio Grande and killed 11 United States soldiers. This came as part of a revolt against the Mexican president, who was considering America's bid to buy California. The soldiers were angered about the lands that they felt were taken through the annexation of Texas, and the Rio Grande was an area of border dispute. By May 13th, the U.S. had officially declared war on Mexico, and critics of that war called it Mr. Polk's War. The war was over by the end of 1847 with Mexico suing for peace. And we see the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo that ended the Mexican War formally fixed the boundary between Texas and Mexico at the Rio Grande. In addition, the United States was able to acquire both California and Nevada. So this was the greatest increase in United States land since Thomas Jefferson negotiated the Louisiana Purchase. America agreed to pay Mexico $15 million for the territories. Well, in 1849, Polk died at the age of 53. It was only 3 months after his retirement from office. He had no desire to run for re-election, and he had decided to retire, and his death was probably due to cholera. Well, we see so much in this man. The book entitled The Presidents, 250 Years of American Political Leadership by Ian Dale, that James Knox Polk is the most consequential American president that you've never heard of. When he first emerged as a dark horse candidate to lead the Democratic Party in the 1844 presidential election, his main opponent in the Whig Party dismissed him. He was so unknown to most voters that the Whigs adopted a jeering campaign slogan, "Who is James K. Polk?" Today, most people probably would ask that question. He's largely unknown outside the pages of history books, an invisible president whose name has faded over time. Yet, listen to this, yet if you've been to California, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Utah, Idaho, Oregon, Washington State, or certain parts of Wyoming, Montana, Oklahoma, and Kansas, you've stood in territory that wasn't part of the United States before Polk acquired it through conquest and diplomacy. And so we have that song that mentions America stretching from sea to shining sea, but the reality is that line was made possible by James Knox Polk. Dale goes on and says, before there was power, there was piety. Polk was born into a religious Presbyterian family in North Carolina in 1795, shortly after America had gained its independence. They taught Polk that the gospel of duty demanded hard work. Polk mostly grew up in Tennessee, where his father had taken the family. There they became prosperous. His family owned 50 slaves, but Polk later returned to North Carolina to study mathematics and classics at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. By 1820, he had gained additional qualifications in law, but he decided to launch a political career instead. John Siegenthaler, in his book James K. Polk, talks a little bit about Polk's history when it comes to his spiritual life. In his presidential diary, Polk occasionally mentions the quality of a sermon he heard at church with Sarah, but more as if he were a theater critic than a worshiper. The church going was at Sarah's initiative, so we see a wife that pushed toward these spiritual aspects in his life. Most often he notes in his diary that he accompanied his wife to church. She had no hesitation in interrupting a Sunday morning presidential conference by walking into his office and inviting, in parentheses, it may have been a demand, the assembled conferers to attend with her. Rarely in his life did he speak on his religious commitment. When expressing a slightly partiality for the Methodist Church, he comes across more as if he were considering which fork in a road to take for a comfortable horseback ride rather than selecting a path to salvation. And as president, he rarely referred to God in his diary or suggested that he prayed for guidance or heavenly intervention in his life, not even during the war with Mexico. On one occasion, after an angry argument with a preacher, he did thank God for the constitutional wall between government and religion. Once, when frustrated by individuals seeking official appointments, he promised that if a kind providence permitted him length of days and health, he would write the secret and hitherto unknown history of the evil workings of government. Again, the deity turned up in his diary when he discussed with his cabinet how to handle the growing difficulties with Great Britain and Mexico. The country should stand firm against both countries, said Polk, and leave the rest to God and the country. But religion was second to politics in Polk's life. The book entitled The Faith of the Presidents by Wiley talks about the fact that there were aspects in his life that the idea of spirituality took precedence. That it mentions here, but another Christian denomination played a major role in Polk's life as well, the Methodists. While on a political campaign in the summer of 1833, Polk made his way through the middle part of Tennessee, which had him crossing paths with Methodist circuit riding minister John B. McFerrin. Polk attended one of those lively events at Peaks Campground, listening to McFerrin's preach on the Christian's hope, which revitalized his spiritual well-being. And even though Polk still dutifully attended with his wife to Presbyterian churches, from that point on, Polk identified more personally with the Methodist denomination, even requesting Reverend McFerrin to baptize him while the ailing former president was on his deathbed. And we see that talked about a little bit more in the book by Grinder and Shaw, The Presidents and Their Faith. And it says, early on during his 4 years as president, Polk recorded in his diary his reactions to a sermon that he had heard on his birthday at the Foundry Methodist Church in Washington, D.C. Reflecting on his own view of his perceived role in the world, he wrote that the sermon had awakened the reflection that I had lived 50 years and that before 50 more would expire, I would be sleeping with the generations which had gone before me. I thought of the vanity of the world's honors, how little they would profit me half a century hence, and that it was time for me to be putting my house in order. It would not be until 4 years later that he would complete putting his house in order by asking that same preacher, who had been instrumental in his spiritual awakening, to come to his home and baptize him as a Methodist. And so we see Reverend McFerrin baptized Polk and received him into membership in the Methodist Church a mere week before Polk's death and only a few months after leaving the presidency and returning to Tennessee. Polk then was the first United States president who was a Methodist, and he was likely the first president to have experienced a religious awakening in a camp meeting. And yet, despite the clear and strong faith that Polk possessed, he was still adamant about the need to protect the rights of others to worship in their own ways and to keep his religious beliefs to himself while president, all of which were strong and consistent threads in the administrations of his presidential predecessors. And so we see a man that comes to grips with his mortality, and we must learn from him to act sooner when it comes to spiritual aspects in our lives.